This is the Beyond Penguins podcast for December 2008.
We're trekking across the poles just to find ways to help you teach science in your elementary classroom. We'll tackle common misconceptions your students might have about science using stories, teaching activities, and the latest news related to the poles. I'm Robert Payo.
And I'm Stephanie Chasteen. In this week's episode of the Beyond Penguins podcast, we'll go on a walk from the center of the Earth all the way to the surface. Along the way, we'll learn about volcanoes in Antarctica, hardly the place most people expect to find them. This is the premiere episode of the Beyond Penguins podcast. Tune in every month for new ways to get your students interested in learning about the most extreme places on Earth.
This podcast is a monthly production of Beyond Penguins and Polar Bears, a free online professional development magazine for elementary educators. Be sure to go on the web at beyondpenguins.nsdl.org for more ideas on how to introduce polar science and literacy into your teaching.
The poles are like, you know, really cold. And like most students, cold sticks in my mind as kind of like dead. So I never really thought about going to the poles to study volcanoes and earthquakes. But in the December issue of Beyond Penguins and Polar Bears, you can find out about Mount Erebus, an active volcano in the heart of Antarctica, which is really a pretty unique volcano. You'll learn about ice caves and pillars of frozen steam, which are products of the interaction between glacial ice and the Earth's internal heat. And in the volcano's crater, a lake of lava. Scientists use this lake as a window into the heart of the volcano, its magma chamber, located miles below the Earth's surface. Find out more, including videos of Mount Erebus and stories from scientists in the field, in the online magazine. Imagine a volcano. You might picture a tropical island with lava flowing down through the palm trees to empty into a steaming sea. However, volcanoes aren't really an outgrowth of the Earth's surface, its crust. Instead, they start many miles below, where temperatures are high enough to melt rock into magma. Trapped under those miles of rock, the magma is subject to huge pressures. When it finds a weak point upstairs in the crust, it comes pouring out onto the surface, regardless of the weather it finds up above. Now, that's what we call a volcano. And you're just as likely to find a volcano poking out from Antarctica's windswept glaciers as on a tropical island, as long as there's one of those weak points in the crust there. So, to understand volcanoes, we have to know a little bit about the structure of everything that sits beneath them. Well, we called on an expert to help us out with this.
Hi, my name is Eric Muller. I'm an educator at the Exploratorium Teacher Institute.
That's the Exploratorium Museum of Science, Art, and Human Perception over in San Francisco. I brought Eric in to walk us through, literally, an activity he developed to show kids about the inner structure of the Earth.
I'm going
to
walk you through an activity I do with my students called Earthwalk. It gets kids up and moving, and it's not only hands-on, but it's a feet-on activity that you can do for your Earth science class. You know, kids have a lot of different conceptions about what's inside the Earth. Some of them think that the inside of the Earth is, it's homogeneous all the way through. Some people think it's hollow.
And some think that there's this giant pool of lava boiling under the Earth's crust everywhere, just waiting to pop out at a volcano.
So we're going to get going. So this is what you need. You probably need a handout called Earthwalk, which helps you get the information and all the measurements you need in order to do this activity. And you're also going to need a tape measure, and you're going to need some pieces of chalk. So what I usually do is I introduce students to the actual size of the Earth, and the center of the Earth to the surface, it's 6,400 kilometers. And I tell them we're going to slice the Earth in half, just like a cantaloupe, and we're going to walk it from the center out to the surface. The problem is if you actually walk that real distance, your class would go very long. So what we do is we scale the Earth down. So I usually use 100 meters as the scaled radius of the Earth. So the students have to take information given to them on the various layers of the Earth. So the inner core, the outer core, the lower mantle, the upper mantle, the lithosphere, and the crust all have to be scaled to the appropriate thickness for a 100-meter walk. After the students have the calculations, we go outside, we take our piece of chalk, and we start marking on the ground. We use chalk to mark where the various layers of the Earth are because chalk will blow away and it'll just erase when it rains. Also, when I do the center of the Earth, I actually put it put some other object there to kind of help see it when you get towards the surface, because you're going to be pretty far away. You're going to be at least the length of a football field. So I'll put a cone or a trash can or a bench right next to where I write down the center of the Earth. So we start at the center, and we work our way out. So the first thing we do is we walk to the first top of the first layer, which the top of the first layer is we're going to go to the edge of the inner and outer core of the Earth. The scale distance on a 100-meter walk is 19 meters. When we get to the top of the inner core, I talk to the students about what they would just cross through. The inner core is a solid ball, and scientists actually think that it might even be one big crystal of iron nickel in the very center of the Earth.
A common student misconception is also that the center of the Earth must be stone cold, because it can't be warmed up by the heat of the sun.
The thing is that the center of the Earth is about as hot as the surface of the sun. It's really, really hot. And the reason why it's so hot is because the other ingredients down there, which are radioactive, keep the center of the Earth hot and radiating out heat. If that metal was actually at the surface of the Earth, it would actually vaporize. It would turn into a plasma. It is so hot down there. But the reason why it's a solid is because there's so much pressure in the middle of the Earth. If you think about it, it would be as if you took a 1-liter bottle of water and balanced it on the tippy tip of your index finger. That would be about one atmosphere. And imagine stacking 3 to 4 million more bottles of water on top of your index finger. It would probably hurt. You might even break your finger at that point. Then we keep walking to the top of the next layer, and the next layer is the outer core, and we're going to head to the boundary between the outer core and the lower mantle. And that distance we're going to walk is 36 meters. And then we talk about what we just walked through. The interesting thing is that the outer core is also metal. It's also iron nickel. And that is extremely hot too. But the thing is that even though it's so hot that if you brought that outer core material to the surface of Earth, that would vaporize too. The thing is that one has a little less pressure on it. So the outer core is liquid. It's actually pretty runny. And they think that this runny, molten metal is what causes the Earth's magnetic fields.
That's because this metallic fluid flows around inside the Earth, creating what's called a dynamo, which makes magnetic field. See the researcher stories in the December issue of Beyond Penguins and Polar Bears for how Mount Erebus is telling us more about the Earth's magnetic field, and why, surprisingly, it flips direction every few 100,000 years. So, in the Earthwalk, we're now at the boundary between the outer core and the lower mantle.
This is the border between the metal part of the Earth and the rock part of the Earth. The difference in density between the core and the mantle is greater than the density difference between the sky and the ground that I'm standing on right now. It's a huge difference. What we're going to do is we're going to walk from the boundary between the core and the mantle, and we're going to head towards the top of the lower mantle. We're going to walk 34 meters. Here we are at the top of the lower mantle. Up above us is the upper mantle. It's a very subtle difference between the lower and the upper mantle, but they believe this area is where there's a chemical change in the mantle.
Though, really, not much is known about this part of the Earth. The tectonic plates also don't go below this zone.
So now, we're going to go to the top of the upper mantle, and we're going to go about 11 meters.
The upper mantle contains several different parts, like the asthenosphere and the lithosphere. The Earth's crust is in the lithosphere. While the whole mantle is solid, it's not that solid. It's kind of gooey. Well, at least as far as rock goes. The lithosphere is made up of the same stuff as the rest of the mantle, but it's just a little harder.
You kind of think of it as pudding. So whenever you cooked old-time pudding, and you used to get that kind of skin on the top of it, but it was still pudding, the skin was pudding, then below it you had the liquid, the pudding. Well, that's what's going on in the Earth. The lithosphere is mostly made out of mantle material. It's hardened mantle material, but it's the same as the material down below. On top of the mantle, going up another half a meter, is the crust. And the crust is the lightest material inside the Earth. I've had many geology professors refer to the crustal material of the Earth as the scum of the Earth, just like in soup when the lightest stuff rises to the top. So the stuff we live on is basically the scum of the Earth.
So that's the lithosphere, which is about 2 meters thick on our Earthwalk, including a half meter of crust. But what's just below that? It's that layer called the asthenosphere, which is the mushiest part of the Earth.
It's kind of the grease that the hard part, the lithosphere, kind of rides on. It flows about as fast as maybe the creosote flows down telephone poles. And that is kind of the cushion that the hard parts of the Earth ride on.
So if the mushiest part of the Earth is like creosote, then you can see what I mean, that saying the mantle is gooey or like pudding is speaking in really relative terms.
The lithosphere comprises all the plates on the planet. There's about a dozen or a little bit more plates wandering around the Earth that kind of cruise all around, that bang into each other, that slide past each other, that cause the earthquakes of the world and also cause the volcanoes of the world. These plates are diving and crashing into each other all over the place. So these events, these earthquakes and volcanic events are happening all over the world, all the way from the North Pole to the South Pole.
But volcanoes can start much deeper down than this shallow lithosphere.
They believe the source of the heat for the Hawaiian Islands is coming all the way up, pretty much directly from the core of the Earth.
That heat can melt some of the mantle. Now, magma is melted rock, not melted metal. That means that it's melted mantle, not melted core. Most places, the mantle is that pudding-like rock, which is really pretty solid by our standards. But some places, it gets hot enough to melt and flow.
So the Hawaiian Islands is a big hole, is a hole that's being burnt in the Earth. And because the chemical changes as the magma comes up to the Earth, it becomes molten, it works its way through, and it spreads that onto the Hawaiian Islands. So now that we're here at the crust of the Earth, I have the students not only mark the boundary between the crust and the sky, but I have them start drawing various structures on the surface of the Earth. Some of the things I have them draw, or I try to have them draw to scale, are the deepest drill hole, which would only be 23 centimeters deep. That's the farthest man has ever shoved a man-made object inside the Earth. I have them draw the Sears Tower, which would only be about 7 millimeters high. It would be sticking out towards the sky. Mount Everest would only be 14 centimeters in this scale. And the space shuttle, if they drew that above the surface of the Earth, would only be floating above the surface of the Earth about 3.1 meters, which is almost nothing. The other interesting thing is that the layer up above us, which is obviously sky, if you took about half a step away from the crust of the Earth, you would actually be above about 99.9% of the Earth's atmosphere. When you look at all these structures, including the space shuttle, and you look back towards your marker, which is the center of the Earth, you realize that the stuff on the surface of the Earth is really insignificant compared to the rest of the size of the Earth. It's really small. You're about a football field away from where you started. People really enjoy going out in the open and actually taking walks rather than sitting and hearing a lecture about what's inside of the Earth. This kind of gets them up and moving, and they tend to listen more when you actually grab them and pull them back together from place to place, especially if they can draw things on the ground with a piece of chalk. That really captures their attention.
A big thanks to the Exploratorium's Eric Muller and to Robin Marks, who held the microphone. Thanks, too, to David Samuels for help with show development this month. Be sure to check out next month's podcast, where we explore what kinds of mammals can be found at the poles. And we're not just talking about polar bears.
This podcast is a monthly feature of Beyond Penguins and Polar Bears at beyondpenguins.nsdl.org and is created by the National Science Digital Library in partnership with Ohio State University.
Funding for Beyond Penguins and Polar Bears is provided by the National Science Foundation. All music is licensed under the Creative Commons. You've heard Relaxation Spa Treatment by Dan the Automator. So until next time,
this is Robert Payo
and Stephanie Chastine. We'll see you on our next trip up to the poles.